So here we are, basically about two weeks before the Fallen Earth launch. I'm playing the beta as we speak, and you can see that the game is running remarkably smooth, you know? 3 months ago, there was quite a bit of lag, but you can see the man run by me, and he's saying, look at me, I'm not lagging. And of course, everyone around here, we are all very excited.
From the point of view of us now, it's strange looking back at the moment when Fallen Earth launched. So much happened, you know, that final month for Icarus Studios right before they launched the game. You know, there are people, there are fans out there who were wondering whether or not it was going to be ready to go. There was problems at the time. I think they were like 2 weeks away from launch, and there were still talks about lag problems and desktop crashes.
They're spending so much time on this game to fix the problems in it, when it could be spent fixing the stability of the game. I mean, when I'm talking on Skype and playing EVE Online and buying things on eBay all at the same time I'm playing Fallen Earth, I get lag and crashes. And I just don't think anyone could even think it's because of Windows Vista. Everyone knows Windows Vista is the most stable platform out there. It has to be Fallen Earth.
The lag in this game, it's gotta go. I don't care where it go, it just gotta go.
And so here it was. Fallen Earth is in the 11th hour, and then, without warning, the patches continued to get released, and the game started to get fixed, and the lag was disappearing, and we knew something was completely unusual. Icarus Studios was fixing the game, and it began to scare people.
We knew Icarus Studios was hiding something. It took Flagship Studios 2 months to patch Hellgate London. 2 months! And here's Icarus Studios fixing it in a week. It just looked very unusual.
And at that time, everybody wanted to know what it was that they were doing. The fact is, there's a lot of secrets hidden in District 9. Or Icarus Studios. I'm sorry, what did I say? Oh, I don't even know where I got that. The story of Fallen Earth is an astounding story. A small MMO developer team called Icarus Studios decides to make a post-apocalyptic online game. They'd done quite a bit with the design of the game, you know, to try to make it stand out from other games at that time. They had an elaborate crafting system, a combat system that, at the time, hadn't really been done that way yet. There was a lot of skeptics who didn't think that they were going to make it.
And then after 5 years of little information, the game suddenly emerges with a better graphics engine, all new artwork, and the announcement that it'd be going into beta soon. I mean, it took everyone off guard. We all realized that we'd be playing the game, probably before the year was out. It was amazing. Everyone was obviously very excited, but it drew a lot of worry. We didn't know how the game would end up, and at that point, we'd all set the bar really high in our minds.
When the beta test finally started, there was a lot of concerns by the players about the state of the game. We all remember the Vanguard Online incident of 2006, and I think that was all still fresh in our minds at the time, and we were worried that perhaps the game was inevitably going to McQuaid itself. You know, early builds obviously didn't have everything finished yet, which I think people were forgetting, and there were complaints by people about lag and crashes, and the fan base became openly concerned that maybe the game they waited for wouldn't be ready to launch. And that brought up a good point. I mean, the point of a beta test is to test the game, and sometimes we as players have to remember that we're helping fix it, and I think too often we forget that, and people became far too concerned, and at times during the making of that game, it turned violent.
Opposition supporters and security forces appear braced for another confrontation. On this side, hundreds of police and paramilitary forces. They've just added another truck now.
There was rioting in the streets, and people were dividing up into factions and trying to kill each other in Team Fortress 2. You couldn't enter a forum anywhere in the MMO world without someone violently voicing their concern and constantly spelling please with the letters PLZ. And eventually, everyone began to take notice of how important it was that this game work, or there would more than likely be a worldwide panic. At that moment, the entire post-apocalyptic fan base, and indeed the gaming world's eyes, were now focused on Icarus Studios.
Right now, basically, you can see I'm running into the city, and the lag is nowhere near what it was. And, you can see a wolf is running to my character, and he's very hungry, and he's quite angry, as you can see, and, oh, he just got Yes, that was not supposed to really happen that way. Can we turn off the cameras? Okay, now I have respawned. And you can, right now, you can see that rival player over there. And he right now, he's you can see he is using a shovel to beat that other player's head in. You can see he is saying, stay away from me or I will pick you. And he's doing it in celebration of the fact that he can now do that because there is not a leg like there was before.
Then, just like that, the patches start to roll out. Not just small patches, but huge quality fixes. Patches that addressed many, many things that people in the community had reported. See, most MMOs, they stop patching at launch and focus on marketing. But these guys went full force to fix the game. They were fixing the lag, fixing the bugs, they were listening and interacting with the community. It was so unlike an MMO dev team to do something like listen. It made everyone very uncomfortable.
No human developing team could do this. I mean, to actually listen to the community, to fix the bugs. And the quality of these patches and the frequency of how often they came out, I mean, they were a smaller MMO team. It just seemed too good to be true.
For the game to evolve that quickly raised a lot of concern with humanitarian groups. There were things they wanted to know. Were the developers skipping meals? Were they not sleeping at night? These were the questions that started to be asked. And if they weren't sleeping, how were they managing it?
Certain organizations began monitoring their eating habits. Cases of Red Bull were being delivered around the clock. Twinkies were being brought by the caseload to the team and being taken to Icarus Studios. But it didn't seem to add up. So that's when the conspiracy started. The fact that no company had fixed a game that quickly led much of the world to believe that maybe, just maybe, these devs weren't human.
Some groups had suspected for some time that the dev team had undergone genetic manipulation. We'd wondered about it for some time. And the fact that this game was being fixed, which was so unlike an online game, only reinforced the idea for a lot of people. There was talk that they had been cloning the programming team and had genetically modified them using the DNA from dolphins for increased stamina intelligence. Someone else mentioned that they were using the DNA from Robin Williams to give them an endless supply of energy. And at the end of it all, another rumor surfaced that they were using alien technology on their server systems. And the problem was, there was no way to be sure of anything.
How does your server technology work? Where did you get an early copy of Windows 7?
This concern that they might be genetically enhanced or working with aliens caused a major stir with everyone. Everyone had their own reasons for what they thought was happening with Fallen Earth.
There were political factions with different beliefs popping up all over the gaming world at that time. There was a faction called the Chota out of New Jersey that wanted nothing more than to destroy the game. There was a faction on the opposite side of the spectrum called the Vistas, who believed that Icarus Studios' abilities were due to them being one with nature and one with the planet. Oh, yeah, they were out of Berkeley.
And we all remembered the world thinking, at that time, would the release of the game go well? Tensions continued to rise. People who ordered through direct-to-drive felt gypped because they got a horse instead of an ATV. But others, 2,000 blueberries spontaneously appeared in their backpacks. Why? Why?
But the patches continued to come out, and the bugs continued to be fixed. The world's population began listening to Through the Aftermath, which made them relax, and they had a great end-of-beta event.
In the end, what Icarus Studios did was amazing. They had a smaller, more independent group, and yet managed to significantly change a game before launch. We just don't see that kind of thing. Now that everyone's playing, we all forgot to see if they were aliens or not. We're just all too busy playing the game now. I mean, are they working with aliens? Are they hiding some kind of genetic research program that makes them into some kind of super developer? Personally, I think they are. Like I said, no human makes games like that.
And the best part of the whole story is that the game did launch on September 15th, and to this day continues to be a success. And that really is the part that matters.
Actually, we recorded this in the future. The people who are listening to this right now are still back in August.
Well, you Icarus guys are fancy. Am I messing up the timeline right now talking about all this? Oh, good. I feel better then. I was worried I was going to cause some kind of paradigm shift by telling everybody all this stuff. Wait a minute. Why do I have black stuff coming out of my nose?
Welcome back, everyone, to this 18th episode of Through the Aftermath. I'm your host, Sean, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jonathan. How you doing, Jonathan?
I'm doing good, hanging in there right now.
Awesome. How are things out there in the wasteland?
Things are doing well. It is a beautiful day today. Last week in the wasteland was a little bit crazy for the family, but we're doing well.
Well, good. We're at a pretty crazy time too in this. We got the fall gaming release season coming up pretty soon.
Yes.
Of course, the holidays are coming up in a couple months, so it's the weather's getting cooler, and the radiation levels are lowering a little bit, so.
so we can start to, for us.
Yeah. So it's kind of a good time right now, and one of the big releases that are coming out in the next couple of weeks here is Fallen Earth. And Jonathan and I have talked about it plenty of times, and I think on the last show it was just before the NDA was dropped, and we always talk about it, we always joke about it that we might know someone in the Fallen Earth beta. So now we can actually talk about it. Now we can actually admit that for the two of you out there who didn't catch all the hints, that it was us who were actually...
Yeah, we were speaking in third person the entire time. Yes.
But so we've been in the beta for a pretty long time. I was in the alpha toward the end of it, and then I think, Jonathan, you got in like the very first week of the beta when it started.
Yeah, about 4 months ago.
Yeah, so we've been playing for quite a while. I had a little bit of a break in there where I couldn't get the launcher to work for about maybe 2 months. But we'll talk all about that in a second, because this entire show is going to be about our impressions of Fallen Earth. We're just going to go down the line on the different categories of the game and just talk about what we think. We might even rate it a little bit if we're lucky. So we're going to touch on that. We're going to talk about, it's going to be just us being as honest as we can about what we know from the game so far. Of course, we're in beta. We're in open beta right now in the game. It's going to launch on September 15th, which actually that was pushed back because it was supposed to launch on September 9th, and they pushed it back another 6 days. So anybody who pre-orders, though, still gets a start on the 9th. They have a little bit of a early access kind of thing. So we're going to talk about our impressions of the game in what we've seen in the time we've spent. And this means, number one, that we didn't see any end game. You know what I mean? There's not going to be we're not going to talk about the max level stuff because we didn't get there. During betas, especially in closed beta and alpha, they do a lot of restarts where they delete characters, they wipe everything clean, and they give you a fresh restart. So during this time, you're not really supposed to level as fast as you can. You're not really supposed to just shoot for that end goal. You're supposed to test. You're supposed to just try to see what you can break in the game, and then report on it. And that's what a beta is all about. So those are the kind of things we did. Of course, we played the game. We got a nice feel for it, and that's what we're going to talk about. Our first impressions are our experiences with a lot of the different game mechanics and how it fares against other games. So that's it. That's what we're going to talk about. And what we'll do first, though, is we're going to talk a little bit about the news. And since this is a Fallen Earth only show, we'll talk about Fallen Earth news. Like I said, the release date has been pushed back to the 15th, which is a couple weeks away from now. And one other thing I want to talk about was the pre-order. Now, of course, the pre-order is done in a few different ways, but one thing they just announced today is when you do the online download, it's $49.99, that's U.S. dollars, and you get this exclusive in-game ATV, and this is a new thing they just announced. And basically what it is it's the ATVs are like mounts in the game. There are various mounts. There's motorcycles, horses, ATVs, cars, trucks, and this ATV you'll get when you pre-order. And what it has is it has like special features. Like it has 150 more hit points, 10% higher fuel efficiency, and 33% larger gas tank, 4 more storage slots than the basic ATVs, and an awesome custom Fallen Earth paint job, and rims. Ooh,
it's got rims.
And weren't there, there were a few other pre-order items. I know I've seen a horse running around that, right. Was that part of the pre-order?
It was actually, yeah, and this is good, because just to clarify, the one we're talking about, the ATV that they just announced today, is actually, if you download it directly through the Fallen Earth website from them, there was the original pre-order was actually from Direct to Drive, which I personally have never messed with. The whole Direct to Drive stuff I've actually never played with, but if you ordered through them, which was about a week and a half ago they announced that, then you get this, the horse that also had some similar stuff to this one, but did not have rims, I might add. So I don't know. That may
no custom paint job on the horse.
No custom paint job on that horse. And if it had one, it would have been too frightening to ride anyway. So I'm actually curious to see too. Whether they announce like what comes in the actual store bought box. You know, because do we get a map? Do we get a manual? Because that would be interesting to if they had a map that came with it or some little fun swag.
Yeah, especially for a collector's edition, which I don't think they've announced yet, have they?
They haven't. And I've been kind of sad because I really wanted there to be one, because if there was ever, we're sitting here in a world surrounded by collector's editions of big huge games that are coming out, online games, and it's like, wait, this is the one I wanted to have, but you know what, it's that's one thing about it, is you can tell that they're not trying to worry too much about flair. They're to the metal, making sure this game gets done, and that's pretty cool to see.
Yeah, and it's nice that they're offering these little things. Like you said, that the ATV is, if you order it through the website, the horse is, it's like a war horse, I think is what it's called. And it's actually pretty cool. It has this armor on the head, and it looks almost like a medieval horse. It's got these spikes and everything. It's a really cool looking horse, and it's brown. And I believe it has extra, like extra hit points and extra storage, things like that. And that was the Direct to Drive pre-order. So who knows what else they're going to do. I mean, they still have a couple weeks to announce a few things, and I really hope they announce a collector's edition. It's kind of,
I do too. I do too. That would
be
nice.
But yeah, so that's basically where you get from that. That now, of course, the game will be available in stores. It will be available on download from Direct to Drive and through the main Fallen Earth website. So the thing is, it'll be like it's been announced, $49.99 for the box or the download, and then it'll be $15 a month. So it'll be your normal, MMO fee, basically. And we will actually talk, that's one of the categories that we're going to talk about a little bit later, is if it's worth this money, if we think it's worth that money. So let's go ahead and get into this, into these categories. We're going to break this down. And, like I said, I'll just reiterate that, we played, my highest level was 12. And what was your highest level?
My highest level guy was 6, and it was funny because, and I know we were talking a bit about this before the show. I when I first got into the beta, I kind of went nuts with it, and then early in beta, which is often with betas, sometimes they'll have character wipes as they work on the database or do certain updates, and so I got wiped a couple times, and at the end of it, I decided it was kind of like I joked that I was kind of like Bastion on the Neverending Story. Every time I start to play it, I'd be like, no, not yet. We still got a long way to go, So, combine that to, a month from now when we're getting shot at by thousands of people on ATVs and we're screaming, Artex! So, there's there. I've just made that insanity come full circle there. So, I decided what I decided to do, and it sounded like, Sean, it did this as well. We wanted to kind of dabble into the game without jumping too far into it because, partially from the fact that we want our, experience to be kind of pure when we get into it, but also because, my goodness, I have never seen a developer group work so hard to make a game so good, even in the last 11th hour. I mean, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think it's amazing. Like, I never really realized when I would log in that their patch notes, I mean, they have paragraphs of patch notes every single day. So every single day, they are actually just adding so much, they're fixing so much, and I think that's actually one of the biggest things that I hear from people is, I tried this game when beta first came out 3 months ago, and it's crap. And then the next person, this is in the comments, like in a Massively story or something like that, and then the next person will say, well, you need to try it now. Try it in the open beta. And then they'll try it, and they'll be like, wow, that's a completely different game, It's,
yes.
They've really come pretty far. And we'll talk about that a little bit later too, kind of our impressions. But yeah, so basically, like Jonathan said, he got to level 6, I got to 12, and you know, even my 12 was mostly through crafting. Now, you actually do get experience through crafting, which is pretty cool. But you don't get a lot. You get, you know, 30 experience. And I really wanted to research the crafting part of it quite a bit. So that's where I spent most of my time. Jonathan and I think both of us can say that we're not hardcore, you know, straight to the end levelers. We're, you know, the first day we get to max level. We're definitely not those kind of people. And I think that play style of both of us, I think that speaks volumes on why we enjoy this game, because this game is not one where it's aimed towards the quote unquote end game. You know, this is a game that you spend a lot of time. Like, I actually spent a lot of time in one city. And then I kind of zoom out the map and I look and I said, wow, there's all these other cities in this place. This is amazing. And then come to find out I'm only in Sector 1. there's two other sectors, which are, a sector is basically an entire map. So I was thinking I was in a big area of one map, and I was actually in a big area of one of three maps. So it was pretty amazing. And actually, if anybody out there plays Warhammer, it's very similar to that, where there's the different tiers. There's like tier one map, where you have all the different cities, and then you go, you follow a road, and it says, like, there's an arrow, it says two, tier two, and then you go this way, and you go, and then you're in tier two. It's the same thing here. It's sector one, sector two, sector three. So basically what I'm saying is we didn't get, you know, into the 20s or 30 levels up there, but we still got a really good idea of how this game plays. And I think that what we're going to do today is talk about what your impressions, you know, what kind of things you might be looking for in your first 10, 15 levels in the game. You know, what kind of things that you might see to sway you into playing this game long term, or even, you know, even experimenting with it for a few months. So that's what we're going to talk about. You know, we're definitely not claiming to be experts here or anything like that. It's just going to be first impressions. So now that I get that out of the way, let's go ahead and go down some of the categories. The first one I wanted to talk about, and this is kind of a big one that everybody talks about, so I wanted to get it out of the way: the graphics, the whole art style, the graphic style. This is something I think I could say when I first started playing it in alpha, it was horrible. It was absolutely horrible. I won't even beat around the bush there. There were floating trees. There were weird shadows everywhere. But it was an alpha. You know what I mean? It was. I remember going to a city, one of the first cities. I don't even know where it's at now, because I don't know where I was at that point. Even though now I know my way around Sector 1 pretty well. But I went to this little city, and it was basically like a parking lot, and it had all these semi-truck trailers, just the trailers themselves, and they were opened up in the back, and those served as like houses and shops and stuff like that. And I remember looking at this, and it just looked horrible. It looked so cut and paste. It looked so, you know, everything was just kind of sitting there, and it just didn't look organic. And, of course, that was alpha, like I said. And then I played in beta a little bit later, and it just seemed like that was still there. It was just very, you couldn't find yourself immersed in the world. It was just really crappy. And later on, you know, of course, like I mentioned, I had about 2 months, maybe a month and a half, where I could not log in at all. I'd put my password in, it would sit there, it would hang, and it just got frustrating for a while. Sometimes I would leave it overnight to see if maybe I just needed to wait. Maybe it was patching and it wasn't telling me. So I would just let it sit there. I would wake up the next morning and it would still be in the, you know, 56% or something. It would just hang all the time. So I gave up. But it got to a point where I could actually log in. Like, I tried it again. I could log in and it was fine. When I did that, you know, like I said, a month and a half, 2 months later, there was such a drastic difference. It was really incredible. Now, to the point we're at now with open beta, it's 100 times better than even that was. So I think they've done a lot with the graphics. They've listened to the people. That seems to be one of the biggest complaints, is graphics. And I think that even though they're still not there, they're definitely not, you know, they don't have that Fallout 3 look to it. They don't have the kind of beauty that something like Lord of the Rings Online has, or you know, even Warhammer. It doesn't have that polished look to it. Some of the animations are a little funny, things like that. But the thing is, to me, I don't want to sound like a fanboy, but the thing is to me that those things don't really matter that much. You know what I mean? This game isn't about being the most gorgeous game out there with crappy gameplay. It's kind of the opposite. And that's okay with me, I think. So what do you think about the graphics?
You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, when I first logged in 4 months ago, and I was somebody who had been watching this game since it first came out and forgot about it simply because I got busy and my brain was like, please hurry. I have a hard time waiting for games to come out. Like Fallout 3 alone was enough to make me, you know, when they told us 2 years in advance that the game was being made, I was I was on suicide watch for a bit there. So I did the same thing when I got in. It was about 4 months ago. And like you said, the game was night and day compared to what it was now. You know, there was a lot of lag. And this is one place where, you know, we want to set a stage here. We're not trying to sound like we're bagging on the game now, because our opinion then versus the opinion now, you're going to pick up real quick. Mm-hmm. We're different now than we were before. We're not saying like, don't play this game. You're hearing a very non-candy coated. This is what we thought before. Now this is what we think now that we're almost to launch. Yep. So when I first log in, you know, one of the things I noticed, because, you know, just like Sean, I'm a freak for crafting. I played Star Wars Galaxies and I was the goofball who never really did any of the, it really never left the world, because all I did was harvest stuff, build ships and fly around. And that's all I did, because I loved crafting and I love factories. And this game, you know, plays right into that. And so when I jumped into it, the first thing I did was went to the town that they were mentioning at the time was, oh yeah, if you're into crafting, this is where you needed to go. And it was a town full of little tiny tents that were set up almost like a giant county fair kind of a thing, almost like a little trading post type of area. And the first thing I noticed right off the bat was that very many of those tents were about 4 feet in the air. And so it was a little bit weird. I was assuming unless Gozer was eminent, you know, obviously that was not going to be normal. So, but it did worry me, because it was a game that I was like, no, this is supposed to be my game. What's happening here? And just like Sean, I took a break from it and came back and did the exact same thing Sean did. I came back and went, oh my gosh, what did you guys do? I mean, it was like night and day. You know, what started out as a game with a lot of weird glitches and a lot of, like, the textures, being straight up honest, when I first played, the textures looked like something out of a really bad Second Life area. The ground textures especially just looked very bland. Everything looked very polygon, and it was just like, good gravy. When I came back, everything, textures were there, and the polygons were higher, and it was very obvious that they had been working on the game, the graphics they'd been turning on at the end little by little as things were ready to launch. And so as far as graphics goes now, comparing it, when I log in the game now, it's the lag and the, you know, the graphical glitches are way less than they were. And if you played, you know, any time before, say a month ago, and you thought you formed an opinion of it, your opinion's going to change, because a month ago it was still quite a bit laggy. There were still a lot of graphical glitches, and they really changed a ton of it. And a lot of that lag is disappearing. A lot of it's, you know, the graphics are looking better. And like I said, they're slowly turning things on little by little, the, you know, multi-threading and that type of thing. So that's helping. And we still got 2 weeks to go. Three weeks now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. And if I were to put a numerical rating on this, let's say I would give it probably 6 Chiva viruses out of 10.
6 out of 10? Yeah, as it stands right now? Yeah. Now let me ask you this. Kind of seeing, and we'll get into this in a little bit, kind of seeing the pattern you've seen here, you've noticed that here at the end that the patching is starting to go quicker and quicker, which is so different from the normal MMO way of thinking. Most games will be like, we're gold, we'll deal with it later, you know, and they just kind of move on to marketing. These guys are like, no, we've got 2 weeks, freaking crank it, you know? Yeah. And so, you know, we're rolling faster and faster. What do you predict, you know, assuming we look back at this episode, what do you predict will be your rating?
At launch, you mean?
At launch.
I know exactly what you're saying. I have a lot of faith that they are going to really improve it. But I don't see it going too much more. Like, I think that they have too much invested in what they have right now to be able to change it that much. I mean, maybe a 7 out of 10 at launch in 2 weeks. I don't know. But I think that might be pushing it. I think that what they have now is pretty much, you know, they can tweak it here and there. See, the things that get me, like the things that kind of affect my rating, on the bad side, you look at stuff like, I don't know, there's some textures that are really, really bad. You look at, like, the police cars. I don't know if it's just my graphics card. I mean, I have a 8800 GT NVIDIA, and it's, you know, it's a couple years old, but it's not the worst thing in the world. And I get some pretty bad textures on a few things. But then on the other side of that spectrum, the sunsets and the skies and the landscapes are amazing. I mean, they have some just gorgeous sunsets in this game. And I think those two sides of the coin are pulling at each other, but I just keep getting the bad textures kind of overpower it, I think. So that's where I get six from.
You know, and I'll tell you why I ask, especially on the graphics is where I ask this, is because two reasons. One is because one thing I've noticed on the patch notes is they are retexturing and remodeling a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Partially for look, because there are probably things that they see that really do still look bad. Also for performance, because they probably got better at it as time went on, and they were like, you know what, knowing what I know now, I could probably go back and make that with a lot better textures, make it look better, but with half the polygons.
Yeah.
The other reason I ask is because when I first started playing due to lag, my settings were kind of at medium. Mm-hmm. What I did was I jumped all my settings to super high.
Yeah.
And the reason I did that, now doing that dropped my frame rate, and it wasn't super bad. I actually felt like it was still playable. And what I saw with the graphics way higher was a lot different than what I saw with the graphics on medium. And that's why I was curious is where does everybody, you know, like in your case, did you find yourself kind of setting it to high, or do you find yourself kind of in between?
No, actually, yeah, I actually played for a while on kind of medium settings, and it didn't mm-hmm. really bother me. And then I set it on the extreme highest, mostly for screenshots for Massively. I'm doing a few guides and things like that. And I set it on the most extreme high, and I didn't really notice any kind of performance difference. So I kept it on high, and it is a world of difference, because then you have shadows, you have the kind of ambience to it, and there's a couple other things that really, like draw distance and everything, it really makes a giant difference. But still, yeah, I'm still basing mine off of the extreme high settings.
Sure. Well, and I'm with you on that. I think at this point, I think me personally, you know, I give this 7 mentats out of 10 with the hope that it'll be, you know, 8 by launch. And the one thing I'm looking for, and I say this tentatively because I haven't looked at the patch notes today to see if this actually went in. The one thing that's missing, and I'm assuming they're just waiting for the chance to turn it on, is anti-aliasing. A lot of the edges look way too jagged. You take that out of the picture, and the game is going to automatically look like you're not playing it at 640x480 anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm a sucker for that. Like, I would rather dumb my game down and have it look perfect than have jagged edges. Mm. And so we'll see. I mean, it's. I see a lot of possibility here, mainly because this art team really seems to have learned a lot over time, and I find them going back and retexturing things and going, well, you did good there, you know? So So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, definitely. All right, let's see. Our next category is music. Now, do you have the in-game music on, the background
absolutely
music?
Absolutely, I do. Yes.
I love this music. I absolutely love it. And to me, like, at first I didn't have the music on. Like, I think it's maybe it was by default or something like that. The music wasn't checked. And one day I'm flipping through the options, you know, and I see an empty checkbox for music. And I said, oh, there's music. And I check it. And it is, I don't even know how to describe it. It's so perfect for this game. It's kind of like where I was playing it, kind of in the earlier areas of Sector 1, it's kind of like an acoustic guitar just kind of plucking away at the strings. I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of it's very eerie, and it's very the mood is perfect though. Like when I heard this, I actually turned it up and I'm like, this is some of the best game music I think I've ever heard. And it's not complicated. It's not, an orchestra. It's not a giant, production. It sounds like somebody sitting there playing an acoustic, like they're out in the wasteland. You know, it sounds like somebody just playing in the middle of nowhere. And it's perfect. And I don't know. Like, I've tried a few other, I went into Sector 2 recently. I just basically ran as far as I could. I'm level 12 and I'm like surrounded by level 20, 25 monsters. And so I just ran to get screenshots and stuff like that. And but I went into this and I kind of experienced the different music in the different cities and the different areas and everything. Man, it's all great. I didn't know what to expect in these other cities, if it would all be great, but it is all just wonderful music. And I would have to literally give this, let's see, I'll give this a 10 out of 10 pieces of scrap iron.
You know, I go with that. I like the scrap iron idea. I'm going to go with ingots on this one. Mainly because the ingots are so rare. No, I kid. mainly because the ingots create weapons. Yeah, I'm with you on this. I absolutely agree. The music on this took me off guard because I went into this game not looking for music. The music in Fallout 3 is pretty good. In places, it's phenomenal. But there, in places, it's just kind of ambient. Especially when you're out in the wasteland, it's this very kind of da-da-da kind of music. But it doesn't annoy the way Oblivion's music kind of started to get a little bit repetitive. Now, that said, what they did with this was, and this is actually what I compare it to, it sounds a lot like the guy who did the music to The Stand. That's what I was thinking. And that's the first thing that went through my mind is I'm like, it almost sounds like the music from Megaton combined with, you know, the music from The Stand. I mean, it almost sounds like the guy, you know, the little bass player who stands behind, you know, Mitch Hedberg when he does stand-up comedy. You know, it's like he just sat down and started plunking out some music for this. And it's I really hope that they have a soundtrack because it's so good.
Yeah. Now, I was just thinking that. I don't know if I could see myself – sitting there listening to it like in my car, you know, driving. But I don't know. Maybe I could. Maybe – I mean, see, I think where it's applied here, I think it's perfect. And that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, in real life, sitting there listening to it in my car, driving, I don't know if I could listen to it. But I think that in the game, I usually turn the music off and I listen to my own music or I listen to podcasts or something like that. But this game actually makes me want to listen to the music. It's a pretty rare thing with me, actually.
Well, so you take it out, you extract it, and you stick it in place of your normal Fallout 3 music.
Yeah.
And suddenly Fallout 3 has a new reason to replay it again. And thank you, folks, I managed to sneak that Fallout 3 reference into another show.
And that won't be the last, I imagine.
That won't be the last, I'm sure.
Cool. Okay, so you would say 10 out of 10 also?
Yeah, I would say 10 out of 10 ingots, and definitely. I mean, and I hope that continues. Whoever they got to do the music, you're a genius.
All right, so let's move on to combat. For me, the combat, basically what it is you can you press tab to enter combat, and this happens with both melee and ranged weapons. With melee, you get this big circle. It's kind of your general area where you're hitting. You know, if you have a board or something, you're hitting towards this thing. When you press tab, it opens that up. When you have guns or any ranged weapon, you press tab and it opens up a, you know, like your sights. And what's cool about this is with the guns, it's not like with other shooter MMOs, like for example, Tabula Rasa. If anyone here has played Tabula Rasa, it was very easy. It locked on the target. You sit there and you click and you're always going to hit. You know what I mean? And the chance to miss was a rarity. With this game, you actually have to move that little target thing over the person, and not only that, you actually see the blood come out like where you hit them. Like if you're shooting them in the arm, the blood's going to come out of their arm. You shoot them in the leg, it's going to come out of their leg. And it's not, you know, it's basically a red splash. It's not the most, you know, it's not really gory or anything like that. But it's pretty realistic looking. You can miss, you can hit the ground and dirt, you know, a little poof of dirt will come up. You can hear ricochet sounds and you hit things in the background. I mean, it's really a lot of fun. With the melee, it's kind of the same thing where you're sitting there, you're swinging. You can use the right and left mouse button. I know we talked about this before on an earlier show that like if you have two pistols in your hand, you're going back between right and left mouse button to shoot both pistols. And it's the same with most other thing, especially with melee. If you have a two-handed melee weapon, it depends on which side you're hitting from is, you know, right or left mouse button. So it's a lot of fun like that. Now, the only problem I have with it is that it's very, very, very clicky. You're sitting there clicking, 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 and you're getting an actual hit in maybe – Well, maybe this is the way I play. I don't know. I just keep clicking, clicking, clicking like crazy. And I get a hit in like every fifth time I'm clicking. You know what I mean? So I'm just click, 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 and then he's like, bam, click, 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 bam. And it's just the speed of combat is not the fastest. You know, you're swinging, then you're kind of, you know, pulling the like, for the longest time I had a sword on my character. So so she has a sword, and she's swinging, and then she's kind of bringing it back, and then she's swinging on the other side, and it's, it's a lot slower than, I guess that, it's not like an action-based combat. It's not, you know, it's not a twitch-based, I guess is the word. Now, as far as the skills that you use, this is, I think this is pretty big, actually. We'll talk about the skills in a different segment. I just basically want to talk about the combat itself, as far as the clicking and the response and everything. So what do you think about all that?
You know what? I give the combat, and like you said, I give the combat, at this point, I give it 7.5 feral ghouls. And I can get away with that with this one because one of the feral ghouls doesn't have an arm. So there it is. I think the combat is fantastic. I am a sucker for combat that is action-based like that. You know, like you said, I'm glad you mentioned Tabula Rasa because I was about to bring that up. You know, I'm one of the, you know, a lot of people didn't like it. I love the combat in Tabula Rasa. I was like waiting for somebody out there to be like, I have a daughter. How could you? You know, like, how dare I bring that game back up? But I thought the combat in that was a blast, even if it was simulated Twitch. And the same as with this. And the idea of adding, you know, whoever had the idea of the right and left mouse button, you know, being the right and left gun,
yeah,
you know, as opposed to the Tomb Raider, you shoot both guns independently as you push. I think that was brilliant. Now it does need a little bit of tweaking. I think it weirds a lot of people out at first till they get the hang of it. But I have a high hope that by launch, it's going to be right at about 8 or 9. And when they, you know, the combat is, I think, one of my main things I really push for people to want to play this game is, you know, crafting being number one. This, you know, the combat in this is very unusual, and it's not, you know, getting a point straight across. This is not your click on the guy, push one over and over and over,
yeah,
until you die. You know, this, exactly, is very much, you're going to run and shoot, and if you don't move, you're going to get your butt handed to you. And I love that because it's real skill involved.
Exactly. I feel the exact same way. I really get tired of game. Now, I love, you know, I'm used to, I guess you could say, the traditional MMO combat. And it's just like you said, you know, with Guild Wars, it was especially like this. You press tab for next target, and then you press spacebar to attack. And it was, and then from there, you press 1, 2, 3, 4, or, you know, 1, 3, 2, whatever it is. And you're sitting there memorizing combos, you're memorizing stuff like that. This game is not like that at all. It's much more on player skill, you know, how good you can aim, you can kind of control your mouse. You know, with melee, it's basically the same thing. You're kiting around the guy, where you're hitting him and he's kiting around you. You know, you're kind of dodging back and forth. Now, there are attributes and stats that play into this as well, but it's heavily dependent on the actual person playing the game, and I really enjoy that. So I think I'm going to give this, I will actually give this combat an 8 revolvers out of 10.
8 revolvers. And you have many bullets per revolver, so that you're double shooting as we speak here. good call.
So what number did you give it?
I gave it 7.5.
Oh, 7.5, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The arm missing.
I'm hoping that Feral Ghoul finds his arm between now and launch.
All right, so let's move into another big one. Now, graphics, of course, was the big one, but this next one is huge for me, and that's crafting. The crafting system is unique, but I think it hasn't been touched like this in a long time. I would actually say since Star Wars Galaxies, you know, pre-NGE. Basically, a basic rundown of the crafting. You gather resources like you would in any normal game. You can run around. There are crafting nodes. There's cars on the side of the road that you can take, you know, fasteners from and scrap glass. And then there's like tires where you can get scrap rubber. There's even corpses laying around where you can get like pieces of cloth or wool or cotton or whatever. And you get these different pieces. You get, you know, wood. You can find boards laying around. You can pick those up. And there's a harvesting time in each of these. If you kill say a big crab, a big hermit crab. You can kill it, you can loot it for the pieces of it, like say a hermit crab leg, and then you actually harvest it after that, for its, like tainted meat or things like that. And that's actually, that's really similar to World of Warcraft, where they, you kind of, there's like two stages to, gathering resources. And that's what this is in certain things. You know, of course you have to learn how to do all this stuff, which again, we'll talk about a little bit later. But from there, you get the resources, you gather them, you don't need a place to do everything. Lord of the Rings Online is like that, where you have to go to a forge to forge everything. You don't really need to do that, although you can do it. There are places where you can go to craft, and it actually, what it does is speeds up your crafting time. Now, crafting time is very important in this game because it's offline. It's real time, and it can be done either online or offline. So let's say, this is a good example, is let's say you want to make a sword. And basically what it is it's pounded down metal. So you need to get the scrap iron for it. You need to get the pieces for the handle, all this stuff. You need to learn how to make it. Once you have all that stuff, it will take, let's say, 20 minutes. Like 20 actual real-time minutes to make this sword. You can set up a queue of crafting. You can make this big queue, and then you can go and do quests. You can do whatever you want. You can run around while you're crafting, and this queue will continuously go. You can log off the game, and this queue will keep going. And what I like to do is I will set up a queue at night before I go to bed, and then I'll wake up the next morning, and all my stuff is crafted. And I think it's a great system. I really like that. Some people cannot stand that. Some people think, like, 10 minutes to make a 2x4? You know, like, that's crazy. But that's the way it is. I think it makes it more authentic. I think it really curbs the economy a little bit. I think a good example, I'm going to shut up in a second here, but a good example of how it curbs the economy is there is a quest where you have to get parts to build an ATV engine. You get the crankshaft, you get the different parts, and you build the ATV engine. You have to learn how to do it from books. You have to get all the pieces for it, and then it takes something like, I think 4 hours. I think 4 real hours it takes to craft that. You know what? That's great. If you want to do that, if you want to spend that 4 hours and get the resources and learn how to do that, that is great. Because you know what you can do is you can sell that engine to people who don't want to spend that 4 hours doing it. You can put it up in the auction house and you can sell it and you can make some good money. I love that. I absolutely love that because they say, I think it's like, what is it, 95% of all items in the game are craftable?
Yep.
That's what it is, yeah.
I think it is 95.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there you go. I mean, if you want something that you see somebody has a helmet that you want, you can go in the auction house and look for it, and you don't have to craft it. You don't have to learn how to craft it. You don't have to get the things. That's a basic MMO mechanic right there, but I think it adds more to it with the real-time thing to it. So for me, I would give the crafting, here I am, let me back up a little bit here, though, because here I am talking about how great it is and how much I love it, but it is still really grindy. I don't mind that as much. It's just it takes a long, long time to kind of work your way up to certain things. Plus they cap the skills, so you have to actually, it's dependent on your level. So I am at the point where I keep capping off all my crafting skills, my trade skills, and then I'm like, well, now I have to go fight stuff so that I can get my character level higher, just so that I can craft more. You know what I mean? And that kind of irks me a little bit. I wish it was just unlimited. I wish I could just be a crafter. You know what I mean? I wish I could be a master crafter at level 10. I wish I could do that. I'm sure there are reasons they do that. They don't do that. So for that reason, that only little tiny, annoyance to me, I'm going to give it 9 out of 10 forges. 9 out of 10 forges.
You know, I'm with you on that. The crafting is half the reason right there that I am all for this game. And I believe, where most people would say, that crafting sounds absolutely insane, it lends itself perfectly to this kind of storyline. We're out there, we're surviving. It makes sense that you aren't going to have guys that are going to hand everything out to you. If you're looking to a crafting system that's a lot more simplistic, you know, like in a game like, you know, WoW, where it's pretty much, you know, kind of a side thing, but it's not necessarily part, something you have to do. You're going to have a struggle with this. I like to tell people that it's the resources, system of Guild Wars combined with the real time, queuing of EVE Online skill system. And, you know, people out there are probably laughing at that one, but I love that kind of stuff. I love the real-time system. There's a lot of people I have met who don't like it. The reason I like it is because, again, it adds this real work, real life element to it. Even after I'm, you know, when I'm not playing the game, I feel like I'm still contributing. And it does. It gives a true economy because you are putting genuine work into creating an item. Well, you've just weeded out half the people who want to make money quick. Mm-hmm. The people who are going to make the money are the ones going to do the work, and that's the way it should be,
yeah.
You know? And so, I mean, it has tons of possibility here, and I can see where they're just going to probably, they've got it in place, the basis for this, and they're probably just going to go from here. There's going to be things they're going to be able to build onto, but I love, you know, I love that they added the fact that if you craft near a station, it speeds things up. Mm-hmm. You know, I love that you can do it when you're offline, but most of all, I love that just about every item in the game is going to come from that player crafting. And it just blows my mind. I think, you know, any other game, I probably would be like, wow, that's pretty crazy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in this game, it's a perfect idea. And for that reason, because people probably think they're hallucinating by making this game the way it is, I'm going to give them 9 Punga Fruits.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yes, yes. Nice.
Cool. Yeah, and I just wanted to point out one other thing is you can get experience crafting. It's not a lot. You'd level a lot faster, you know, killing stuff and doing quests. And I think that might be maybe a little bit of a misnomer that, because I remember being told very early on that, yeah, you can level your character straight through crafting, but like I said, it tops off your trade skills and you can't get any more experience. So I don't think that you can solely level through crafting. I don't think that's actually true. If it is, I would love to be able to do it, but it's not that easy to do, I would say. And another thing I wanted to point out too is I was told about this at GDC, and it's one of the things that amazed me about this game is when I was talking to Colin Dwan, who we had on the show, he said that a car will take weeks of real time to craft. And of course you have to get all the parts. You have to build the engine, you have to build the frame, you have to build the tires, and you put it all together. And it takes weeks, and I love that.
Wow. See, that's the way it should be. That's, yeah. Like Star Wars Galaxies was the comparison you made, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but that's the way it was with Star Wars Galaxies, and I was the sucker, I was the shipbuilder, and I loved that you had to build individual components, and it took you a lot of time and effort and money to create those big, huge capital ships and multiplayer ships. Well, I said capital ships. Somebody out there just went, hey, you know, we never got that. You know, to make the big multiplayer ships, that's how it should be. It should not be right out the gate you get this fancy thing.
Yeah.
You need to work. This is the aftermath. Literally. You know, that's the way it should be. We should be working together to build these things.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's move on to the skill system. Basically, basic rundown of the skill system is it's completely based on books. You can go to your skill trainer for the different things you want to learn. Like, let's say you want to learn more about ballistics, which is anything from zip guns to crossbows to pistols and rifles. The ballistics, you would go to a ballistics trainer. You would buy books that you would read and learn how to now the reading actually that doesn't take time. It's not like you have to, you know, read it for a month before you can read. It's actually an instant thing. But you read the different levels, like say there's ballistics 1, and then there's ballistics 2, and then there's the different parts of ballistics. I mean there's a giant library of books for each individual trade skill. Let's say you want to be a scientist, you don't have to start your character off and choose scientist from a drop-down menu at character creation. You go out and you buy books and you say, I'm going to read up on how to be a scientist, and you gain your levels in the science trade skill. And then let's say you find out that that's not something you want to do. You can always go be an armor crafter, and you can do that, or you can mess with mutagens. Mutagens are actually a lot like kind of a their answer to Magic, kind of. Not too much, but it offers a little bit more to the world than is realistic. So I think it's pretty cool. So you can actually, I guess you could say, major in that. You know what I mean? And at any time, you can also do all of these if you wanted to, which is actually really difficult. But if you wanted to learn, max out every one of them, you could actually do that. I think that the system is brilliant. It's very simple. It's easy to understand. There's a lot of kind of hunting down. Like, for example, when I crafted, I have two revolvers on my character, and that was something I wanted to get from the get-go. You know, I wanted to run around with two revolvers in my hand. And I discovered, this ties back into crafting, but I had to learn I had to get a book on actions, which are the little pieces, the components inside of a revolver that move when you, where you put the bullets in. Those are called actions. So I had to get a book to learn how to craft actions. And then I had to get a book to learn how to craft the barrel. I had to get a book to learn how to craft the handle. And I had to get all these different books to learn these different things. Then I had to go out and get the resources to actually craft these. And then I had to get a book on how to put those all together and make a pistol out of it. You know what I mean? So I love that. I love the fact that I didn't sit here and, there was no step one, do this, step two, do that. It was mostly like, okay, I guess I would need a barrel too. So I'm going to get a book on barrels, on how to make barrels. And it was a lot of, now I'm sure all of that's going to go away once a lot of websites come out. There's going to be guides. There's going to be step-by-step guides, which are going to pretty much walk people through the game. And I think a lot of that is kind of a beta thing for me. But I really like that. I really like the fact that I had to learn how to do this stuff myself. So for skill system, the books, the libraries, and trade skills, and learning how to do all this. And this, let me also say, this applies to combat skills. You can do, this is going to be a 6-hour show. the combat skills you can learn from a trader, and actually, they vary a lot. Like, you can learn how to evade, you can learn how to dodge, you can learn how to swing your sword better. You can learn, and that's just melee. Then they have kind of what they call social, which the social is kind of like a crowd control kind of thing, where you get a book, you learn how to yell certain things at people to gain aggro. You know, it's like a taunt where you gain threat on yourself. They have books to learn how to do that. Then they have books on how to be like a sharpshooter. You know, they have books on medical, where you learn how to do certain skills to heal people. You can heal, you can heal your whole party. You can heal yourself. You can do buffs. So all of this stuff is learned through books, from combat to crafting, everything. And you can learn as much or as little as you want in whatever category you want. And I think that is amazing. So I am going to give, I'm going to give the skill system, and I don't want to do too many of these because I don't want to give out 10 out of 10s too easily, but I'm going to have to give this another 10 out of 10. And I'm going to give it 10 out of 10 interceptors.
Hey, well done. Wow, the last of the V8s.
Yes.
I'm going to absolutely agree with you, and I'm going to say this first up. This was what made the game for me. I am an absolute, and we could take this two ways here, because I'm an absolute sucker for skill-based systems. I always have been. I have been since the days of Ultima Online. I've been since the days of the MUD games. Taking it the other direction, it lends itself to exactly the kind of gameplay that Fallout has, well, Fallout 3 even, that Fallout has and that Wasteland had. It was very skill-based, especially Wasteland was very skill-based. Now, the reason I like the skill-based system, why I love it for this reason, is because, for example, with the crafting, we're in a survivalist world, we're building everything, it's forcing us to truly build the world we live in, we're creating our own economy. With the skills, it forces you to focus, and it focuses you to specialize. Now, and this is the place where I feel like a lot of games miss the boat, and maybe they don't care. I mean, you look at a game like WoW. I mean, and I mentioned WoW because that's the one everybody obviously has played. You've got a very level-based system. You get some specialization, but it's entirely based on what you pick in your tree. But let's be honest, you know, is it really that specialized? Yeah, you know, you get some splits up, or you get, you know, maybe up to five or, you know, so different variations. Maybe your animations look different. Maybe you hit for more. But ultimately, you're kind of still doing the same type of thing. But you compare that to a game like EVE Online, which is also skill-based. And what you hear there, there's no level. You don't hear, well, I'm level four, I can't go in there. You hear guys going, I'm going to be this with this shield, I'm going to use this weapon. Yeah, well, I'm going to pick these and use this, and together we can do this. And there's a very obvious, you're not thinking about it from the next level, or how am I going to get to this level to be able to get to this dungeon. You're thinking of it as, I'm the guy flying the ship. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to shoot. And it's you. You're putting yourself in their shoes. Now, for this game, even better, because now you're going to have guys who are focusing specifically on certain types of combat, certain types of weapons. And just like Fallout 3, you're going to find yourself wanting to replay. You know, this is a game I could see myself rolling many guys, because I could see one guy using, you know, combat this way, or another guy using combat this way. And the skill-based system keeps you constantly wanting more and constantly focusing on the skills you've got, rather than just, if I get to level 12, I can open up a new skill slot. You know, it's very perfect for a game like this, especially with the crafting system the way it is. Mm-hmm. Yep, so I am going to give it 10 bobbleheads out of 10, just like you did as well. And that is the reason. I think they made an extremely good choice with this being the skill-based system that it is.
Nice. Okay, cool. Now let's move into the exploration part of it, the size of the world. This one I don't really have too much to say on. I think that, like I was saying before, that I was surprised that I was in, I was only in one sector, and there were three sectors, and I believe that they're going to have more. For the life of me, I can't think if they have four sectors or three, but anyway, I think the world is pretty vast. I think that the travel time is realistic. I actually appreciate long travel times. The only problem I have with the vastness of the world is that there's not a lot out there between cities. You run around, you see kind of the same stuff, just a vast, you know, there's canyons, there's desert, there's a lot of, you know, crafting nodes and resources, things like that, of course. But you can go out to the desert in certain areas and there's nothing. There's no crafting nodes, nothing. I'm sure this is going to be expanded later on, but my impressions right now, you know, before launch, open beta, is that I think that it's a great thing to have such a vast world, but it does seem very empty. Again, this is a game about the end of the world, so that might not be such a bad thing. I'm going to give the size of the world, the feel of the world, and the exploration factor, I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10 cactuses.
7 out of 10. You know, and it's funny. It's actually blowing my mind, because as we're talking about this and I'm making up what I'm going to give it, you're always exactly on the same page as me. Especially with the ratings, because, you know, I'm going to give mine also 7 out of 7 satellite dishes, because that's one place that was a big piece for me. One of the reasons why I didn't get very high in level is because I took off and started running everywhere. And I ran from city to city just to get the feel, just to get the look of it. And like you said, when you get off the path, there is a lot of emptiness, and there's a lot of – and that's places they've actually been remedying quite a bit. And I think there's even a lot of – random encounters that happen out there. Now, when I say that, I'm going to be very careful here, because when I say random encounters, I don't mean those absolutely pathetic random encounters in Star Wars Galaxies where you would come out of your house one day and a nest would suddenly have spawned out the side of your building. Those were pathetic. These ones seem to be a little more dynamic, a little more interesting. And that's pretty cool. Now, one thing that I remember in our interview, when we were talking to the devs from Fallen Earth, is he mentioned that one of the things that he said, Dwan said, is that one of the things we try to do is we try to put something out in the distance that you're going to want to go see that. And when you get there, you're going to see something else and want to go out there. That happened to me, because I remember very vividly, and this is just a little palate clearing here, I remember running down the street from one of the main cities and going down what used to be a freeway and seeing the freeway exit signs that are pretty much falling apart, seeing the billboards, and then getting to what used to be a freeway interchange to another interstate. Yeah. And just feeling like seeing it looming over me. Obviously, it had fallen apart and, you know, Raiders were on one half of it. But I just stood there and I was like, okay, I feel like I'm in a broken world. And that was something I hear people say, well, this doesn't feel like Fallout 3 at all. I kind of disagree. I know where you're going there because I know, you know, you probably see things a lot. You know, when you find a location, it tends to have more happening there. And it's more focused with story. But in this, what I found was enough to keep me wanting to keep going and looking more. And you know, I remember finding like giant satellite dishes and going, that is so cool, you know, or looking down and seeing, you know, things down happening down below me and going, I love that. You know, looking down and seeing that, you know, the mining operation happening below and going, that looks astounding. Yeah. So I'm with you. I give it 7 because I think that there's places where they need to fill in the gaps just a tad. I mean, yeah. Obviously, it's not – and Bo Turkey's going to kill me for this. It's not Vanguard empty, but it's empty. It feels okay, like Wasteland empty, and I think that it could stand to be tweaked.
Yeah. You know, I just realized that I said cactuses when I was supposed to say cacti.
Well, you haven't trained that skill yet, so it's
– Oh, there we go.
It's not launched yet. We're in beta. Even we are in beta.
Nice save. All right, so the next part would be the social aspect of it. Now, this is, of course, a big part of any MMO. You know, the guilds, the friends lists, the trade chat, you know, the general chat, just seeing people around, getting into groups, things like that. I got into a guild. It was actually a fairly large guild, and I think they call them clans, actually. And I got into it to the clan, and I just kind of got into it just to, you know, experiment and see what it was like. I didn't have any reason to group together with guys or anything like that. But it's one of those things where they were just running around, you know, trying to get as many people as possible. It's for that reason, it's just a gigantic clan. I think that it's pretty typical of any other game. You know, you're going to find you have your clan chat. You have there's not really a lot there to offer from what I found. You know, you can get together, you can have like a welcome screen when you come in and it tells you like, hey, we're going to play Saturday at 7, you know, and that's something that you find in everything. I don't know too much about this though. I have to admit, I don't know if there's anything beyond that because it just wasn't there. It wasn't available for me to really find out. To use it as just a general way to group with other people, I think it's fine. You know, you could go in clan chat and say, hey, who wants to do this? Beyond that, I just don't see anything there. I don't see any reason to want to be in a clan other than just that camaraderie of you know, you, of course you have your name, your clan's name under your name. When somebody sees your character, I guess that could be something. But other than that, I mean, there's no like tabards or there's no capes or, you know, I mean, there wouldn't be that in this game, but you know what I mean? There's no kind of insignia to let people know what clan you're in, things like that. There's no like clan housing. I don't believe there is. There's nothing like that to offer for that. Friends lists are kind of the same way. It's just a list with friends. You know, it's very basic. I don't think that a lot of this was really fleshed out, but what I'm hoping, this is one of the things on my wish list for this game, is that they really flesh this out. I hope they really kind of expand the clans, kind of make people want to play this more than just a single player game with a subscription, which happens to a lot of MMOs. You know, I see a lot of people running around just solo, and soloing this game is not really that possible. There's a lot of really hard areas in this game where you get kind of ganged up on with the way the aggro system is. You know, it's kind of you can get a lot of aggro at once, and things respawn pretty quickly, I think, in my opinion. So I think you do need a group. So kind of a more, I think, just a bigger social system, friends list, clan list, with more options, I think would be great. So I'm going to give this one, I'm going to say a 6 out of 10 broken telephone poles.
Okay, that was good. you know, and I agree with you here. This is actually one where I'm going to be both nice to the company and mean to the players, because this is actually a twofold problem here. I absolutely agree with you. We really don't have a reason that we can see outright to really group up. There's nothing setting us apart. You know, there's no, you know, can our shirts have a logo? Please give us something where, I mean, even the Brotherhood of Steel, who were outcasts, still painted their little, you know, power armor. You know, give us something that gives us some purpose more than just a thing over our head. And maybe they're working on that, but I will say, that's something that needs to be worked on quickly, because your PvP is not going to fall into place unless people have a reason to team up together.
Right.
And now the kicker, and this is the other problem, is I think part of the problem too is that the players aren't quite sure what they're looking at right now.
Right.
We have a lot of people coming from very diverse games, a lot of PvP-based games, you know, a lot of the games that are, you know, the obvious, and they're not quite sure what to think of this. They're staring at this going, I don't get it. And
yeah.
The problem is that the tutorial doesn't do a very good job of explaining it very well. You put through this really interesting, intense story, and you're dumped on the ground. And this is something where, and I'm going to use this particular category to say something I was thinking of saying along the way here, which is you're going to have to think outside the box with this game. This is very much, and I'm going to use this term loosely, this is very much a game like EVE Online minus the intimidation factor. In EVE Online, it's a very, very, you know, very much a sandbox game, and it literally is. You're going to have to make the game out of what you have, and the players are going to have to create the world. There is stuff happening a lot more than EVE. Like, EVE has story somewhat, but all in all, it's you doing what you do. In this game, there is story, there is, you know, raids, stuff like that. That said, you're still going to have to decide what you want to do in the game, and I would say, the biggest piece of advice is put yourself in your character's shoes. That's you. Just like you did with Fallout 3. This is you. What are you going to do now? Mm-hmm. And that might be the problem, is because the developers really need to give us a push to group up. And meanwhile, the players need to relax and remember that this game isn't your typical style game. This is very different, and this game has the potential, with everything falling into place, to be one of the most amazing communities of all time. There's going to be people who aren't going to like this game for that reason, because it's not the typical, but it has a potential.
You know, you pointed out a lot of good things there, and I really got to thinking, and I'm actually going to change my score on this one. I'm actually going to bring it down to 4 out of 10, because I think this is probably the weakest point of the game. When you play a game like this, if the Shiva virus did wipe out humanity and there were, you know, just a percentage left of people, you would want to, well, a lot of people would want to group together and kind of make things work with other people. You know, you would want people with different skill sets to, you know, different strengths and weaknesses to get together, and you would want to be groups. You would want people to group together to protect each other. You would want people to group together to create things and scavenge. You would want to do things like this. And I don't think that that's really there at all. And it's exactly like you said. This game is hard to figure out at first. It takes a little while. It takes some playing around. And being in a good clan would help that a lot. And I think they need to kind of push that. I don't know how, but I think that that's a little bit more important than maybe, or it should be more important than it actually is in the game.
Exactly. There needs to be a reason to group up more beyond, you know, I need somebody to go run this raid with me. Because at this point, there's a lot of soloing going on, and nobody really gives a crap. And you have a lot of, you know, people stealing, you know, resource nodes from somebody else for no other reason than the fact that it's every man for himself right now.
Yeah.
And that's not how this is supposed to play. This is supposed to be survival. And everybody's supposed to be grouping up, and you know, give me a reason to group up in my individual faction. Tell me where my faction is, and give me a reason for me to fight with them against someone else. And so, for that reason, just like you, I'm going to give it 4. Oh crap, Micah's linked dead again. Out of 10.
nice. I guess our next category kind of ties into this too, and that's PvP. From what I saw of PvP, now let me put this out here right now, because it's going to it's going to affect my score. But I didn't really participate in PvP, but I did see it going on. I did enter PvP zones.
Yeah.
Basically, what it is you the PvP zones are open. It's a lot like, again, like Warhammer Online, where they have open RVR, which is realm versus realm. In Fallen Earth, you can be riding along in the middle of the desert, and all of a sudden it'll say, entering PvP zone. And you're like, oh, whoa, wait, I'm going to turn around and go back because I don't want to get ganked here. So they warn you, you know, there are not definite lines in the sand. You know, there's not lines drawn in the sand that say this is a PvP zone. You just end up in a PvP zone. That could be kind of dangerous. I could see a lot of people waiting just inside that zone for newbies to kind of wander in, and then they attack them. And that's fine with me. You know, every man for himself in that kind of situation. Like I said, I didn't get to play with PvP, so I don't really have any experience with that. I think that the way they did it, as far as a general system, the way that there's open areas that you can just enter like that, and there's not like arenas or anything like that, I really like that. I really like the fact that it's like that, that there's kind of danger zones with no posted warnings. You know, I really like that. I think that from what I can tell, from what I know now, it's basically you can get together with your faction and you can just battle it out. You know, you can have your clans against each other. You can do duels. You can do things like that. And this is, like I said, this is secondhand. You know, this is what I heard secondhand, so I don't know this exactly for sure. So I guess I would have to say I can't really rate this one just because of the fact that I don't know enough about it. But I did want to talk a little bit about it, and I just wanted to say, basically, give an overview of what it is, how it's open like that, and just let people know. So yeah, I'm going to cheat a little bit here and not rate that one. But did you get to play with PvP at all?
You know, I did very, very – so it's cracking me up how very similar – you and I never really played the game together, and yet you and I experienced – we're both the same in how we looked at this. I did the same thing. I didn't really get much into the PvP, mainly because I was dabbling. And again, it kind of goes back to, you know, I didn't feel a need to group. I didn't really feel a need to group up with my people just yet. And when I say my people, I'm mentioning the faction types. I didn't really feel a draw necessarily. I think there almost should have been like somebody like recruiters from different groups telling me, you think this, come with us, you know? And maybe there is later. Now this is something where I'm concerned, because if they're hoping that the world is just inevitably going to create itself using a giant open wasteland battlefield, I don't know how well that's going to hold. It worked well in space with EVE Online, but it look where that is. I mean, everybody's on one server. I think the kicker here, and forgive me if this is already here and I'm missing this, but there needs to be more of a reason for the factions to be fighting. I need to feel a reason that I'm part of my faction. I need to feel compelled to help it, rather than just being in it, you know, like, you believe this, you're one of us, and that's all. There needs to be a reason I feel drawn to them. But on top of that, I need to have a reason why I'm ticked off at the other guy, and not just because technically my beliefs do not coincide. It has to be they have done something to me. You know, is there a – this is a place where Dark Age of Camelot is a good example. There were realm keeps, and the realm keeps – you know, as long as you held a realm keep and you did realm sieges and hold that keep, you got bonuses. And those bonuses, if you had a relic, you know, gave your faction something to do. Well, guess what? If somebody came in and kicked your butt while you were gone, ooh, you're mad because you had that keep and they took it from you. Now you have a reason to fight back. Now, if that's already in this game, sweet. If it's not, there needs to be something like that, because yeah, I have to have a reason to go after the other guy other than the fact that the color wheel told me to. and there, I don't feel enough, and I say that nicely because I don't mean to sound sarcastic, because and this is interesting though, because I'm somebody who's been for this game the entire time, and even I'm kind of scratching my head about this.
Yeah.
That needs to be given to me early on in the game, because, you know, even if it is given to me later on when I'm more experienced, it can't be, because you're going to have people dropping left and right if they can't figure out what they're supposed to be doing here.
Yeah.
So, you know, put a recruiter there. Put a reason that I need to fight. Put a low-level PvP area so we can dork around with it for a second before we hit the big daddy stuff. You know, maybe we fight over a party store or something that has resources or something. But, you know, give me a reason to hate the other guy.
Yeah, that's a really good point, yeah.
So I choose not to rate as well for that exact reason, because I could be wrong. If somebody is going to, you know, correct me on that, I'm going to be thrilled. And somebody goes, actually, there is something like the Realm Keep. It's this. You know, I'm going to be the first person to go, I was wrong. Yes.
Yeah.
That said, I haven't heard anything, and that scares me.
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't know too much about it. I don't know if – I mean, there are so many games out there that have such great mechanics for that. You know, Darkfall is all about controlling cities and things like that. And,
yes.
And that's the kind of thing that I hope they have in this, but I don't know. And that kind of stuff needs to be, I guess, kind of advertised a little bit more, even in the game. You know, I mean, I'm sure I could go on a website and look it up and find out exactly, but – in game, you know, they need to tell us this kind of stuff. There needs to be, exactly like you said, some kind of recruiter, some kind of initial dip your foot in the water kind of thing. So,
and again, this just to add one little teeny piece, because this is a perfect example. One thing that Tabula Rasa did very, very good that I thought was brilliant is you had those keeps that were randomly hit by
the Thrax.
Yeah, by the Thrax. Yeah, and yeah. So that made you angry because, you know, even if you held the keep, you had to continue to hold it. And that was an NPC attacking it. What if you created like the opposite faction and had some NPCs from that opposite faction that gave the players who are in that faction, hey, the NPCs are going, let's go with them, you know? That gave you a reason to go kick their butt, and that would be enough for the other side to want to go after you because they have backup and they don't have to organize it. And meanwhile, here come the guys to come kick your butt, and now you're ticked off because NPC or not, he's part of that group. And again, if that's already there,
well,
sweet.
Actually, they do kind of have something like that. I was in New Flagstaff today, just, you know, running around, and there was a group who came in and started attacking the city, and the guards kind of held them off. And it was just like a random kind of thing. So they do have that.
Okay.
Now that doesn't really, I don't think that really applies to PvP. You know, what they can do with that as far as PvP, I think would be a different matter. But yeah, they do kind of have something like that already in place, which is
that helps.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. So our next little part is questing. Questing, of course, is a major part of any MMO, and how quests are done is one of those things that people are trying to continuously improve upon. You know, ever since the early days where you have an exclamation mark over somebody's head, you talk to them, after you finish, you go back and they have a question mark over their head, or they have something like that. A lot of times it's kind of a cut and dry system. Now, I think Fallen Earth has this system. They're not trying anything new. They're not trying to reinvent the wheel here. They have, you know, if the guy has a quest for you, he has a yellow biohazard sign over his head. If you've completed his quest, then he has a green one over his head, and then you talk to him and you get your reward. It's very basic. It's very – there's a lot of, you know, go kill 10 prairie chickens, come back, talk to me, and then I'll give you the next – you know, the second one in that quest chain. And that's usually like then go deliver this package to this guy. You know, there's FedEx quests. There's kill 10 rats quests. There's I believe they even have escort quests. Yeah, they do have escort quests. That's right. So they have all of your basics covered that are in every freaking MMO out there. And and this kind of gets to me because I'm just the kind of person that I'm kind of quested out. You know, I like crafting. I like exploring. I like innovation in my game. And if the best way to gain experience is to do these quests, it's kind of burning me out. And I don't know if it's just I'm just becoming jaded or what, but I just wish they did a little bit something different. It almost seems like they're like, oh, well, we do need quests, so let's just pretty much do what everybody else is doing and do this here. That said, though, my only positive point on it is the sense of humor in these quests is wonderful. They have a great sense of humor. The quest text itself, the whole story, if you actually sit and read it, it's actually really good. There's a great lore behind this whole game. But I hold that at a different branch of the tree than the mechanics of the quests. The mechanics themselves make me not want to read the quest text because I'm kind of like, oh, you know, it's another one of those. I just look at the bottom and it's like, kill 10 of these. And I'm like, oh my, you know, another thing, I guess, this would be, I guess, my second positive thing is that they do have a little bit different, like they have an open quest kind of thing, like the public quests in Warhammer. In Embry Crossroads, they have an Embry Monster Hunt where you can go, you enter a zone, there's no signs that say you're now in this part or anything like that. You run out in this part of the desert near Embry Crossroads and it'll say Embry Monster Hunt. So now you're taking part in this monster hunt where you have to kill certain things, and everybody who enters that zone takes part in that quest. It's like everybody just grouped up, and you know, you get rewards. You turn them in, and you get these monster hunt rewards, and you can turn them in for certain things. I think that's cool because you don't have to accept a quest. You don't have to mess around with, you know, loot distribution or anything like that. Anybody who joins or anybody who enters that area just join the quest and is taking part in it. And I like that. I think that that's a pretty cool thing. But again, it's been done. You know, it's been done a couple times. It's a nice little change up, but it's nothing innovative. So I would give the questing system, even if I combine the wonderful lore and the wonderful sense of humor, that will actually boost it up a little bit. So I would give the questing system, five ATV rims out of 10.
Yeah, I'm going to actually, I think in my mind, I kind of rated it a little bit higher for myself, because, you know, one thing that this game did is it used the normal quest template, which isn't anything necessarily innovative, but it worked okay. Now the score I'm going to give it is based on what I've seen, and it's also going to, I'd like to give it a higher one, but it's going to be dependent on where it goes from here. With a game like this, with a pure sandbox game, I don't think it's good to try to get away with no quests at all. Because you look at a game that tried to do that was EVE Online. It wasn't till recently when we started to have epic stories and more questing, you know, mission type things that I started to kind of feel more like I was involved. And that, the reason was because, and this is where I'm going with this game especially. These quests shouldn't be just a leveling ability alternative. These quests should be designed to get you exploring areas you may not have peeked at before, or get you to get the feel of the game all around. The quest should be teaching me how to explore, teaching me how to interact. And EVE Online, once I had started to do quests that were actually teaching me how to fight other things so I wasn't being thrown into it not knowing, I was less apt to be like standoffish and not try to go. And so if this game continues that way and the quests being template the way they are actually start getting me to want to go to areas I wouldn't gone before and teach me how to play the game, then perfect. On the other hand, if it's just an alternative to the people who don't want to just explore and play it like a sandbox, that's not going to be good enough. But like you said, the storyline alone is worth it right there. And they, some of these quests already that I've ran are loads of fun. They have the same sense of humor as a lot of the Fallout style, and I think that works perfectly. And so I'm going to probably put mine right at about six mushroom clouds out of 10.
Nice. Yeah, I'm almost kind of thinking that maybe I was a little too harsh, but I don't know. I think five is still, I'm going to stay at five. I think there's a lot of things that are nice about it that I can always think of. You know, even the interaction with the NPCs is kind of fun because they talk to you. You know, they say little kind of funny, quirky little things, and it makes it a little bit of fun. But I think my judgment might be skewed a little bit by kind of being burnt out on the whole quest system. But it works. You know, the quests are there. They get you from point A to point B, and like you said, they can teach you more about the game and progress you through the game at you know, some kind of structure. Everything needs structure, and that's the structure right there.
Right.
All right, so we only have a couple left here, and one of the other ones that was pretty important that a lot of people are talking about is the performance of the game. Now, this is always you know, up in the air. It depends on what computer you have, what video card you have, what, you know, just a ton of different things. For me personally, you know, I play a lot of games. I play, and that's what I'm basing this off of, is I'm basing comparing it to other games, especially other games that are launching now. You know, I play Champions Online, I play Ion, all these other games that are launching within the next month. And compared to those, Fallen Earth crashes a heck of a lot more than any of those. I've had a lot of crash issues, and I don't really know what they're caused from. I sometimes during the summer, like I was telling Jonathan this before, I have these overheating issues, and they cause just various games to crash. And I've pretty much solved that by, you know, taping giant fans to the side of my CPU, but even with that, you know, the same settings like that, with all this cooling that I have on my computer, I can play other games and they'll be fine. And Fallen Earth kind of crashes a little bit more than those. So I have been having some performance issues. It seems like, as far as when the game, you know, when it's not crashing and I'm actually in the game and I have the settings all the way on the highest setting graphically, there are only a few hiccups where I'll be running and maybe it usually happens when I'm panning the camera side to side. It'll kind of stick for a second and then it'll jump. And that's the only real graphical lag issues I've had. Again, you know, 8800 GT, is not a brand new video card. So that might be most of my issues right there. You know, if you have a brand new machine, this is probably not going to be an issue for you. I've heard a lot of people complain about the performance issues. They say that it's kind of hard to have a Twitch-based combat game when you get a lot of lag. And I can see that. I can see how that would be a big deal because it's happened to me where I'm sitting there shooting something. And then all of a sudden, this is a big thing too, is the NPCs will kind of warp off to the side. And that, you know, you'll be shooting at something and it'll say that you're missing, and it looks like you're hitting it. The blood's even come off of it. And then all of a sudden, it'll disappear and appear, you know, 20 feet to your left. And you're like, what? Like, that wasn't there before. And that's kind of a server issue, you know, on their side. So things like that have become a nuisance. And I pray that they can fix that by launch. Because if they don't, it's going to be a real, real problem to a lot of people. That could be the deal breaker for a lot of people. If people play the game, no matter how good the crafting is, no matter how good, you know, the questing or the skill system is, if they can't hit a target because the server lag is so bad, they're not going to play this game. So I really worry about that. The performance issues for me personally, I don't know. It's kind of hard to rate, but I would have to give it a 5 out of 10. I'll give it 5 out of 10. Let's see, raid servers. There we go.
Raid server. Yeah, that's good. I like that. Because get it? Because it's a raid server. See what you did there. You know, I'm with you on this, and this is, and I'm going to add some stuff to here because, and some of this is coming from, you know, I frequent the forums quite a bit. You know, and I've been around the block with online games, you know, long enough to know, you know, who are the trolls and who aren't, and you know, what is real information and what isn't. One thing I'm going to say overall is this is a tough one because a lot of the performance is on their side. Now. And they have a need. They have no choice but to remedy that. If you're going to have a Twitch-based game, you have to have the best performance you can get out of it. And they seem to be doing that. They seem to be coming out with, you know, patches and fixes. And within, you know, days and weeks, you know, they have went from 0 to 60 as far as the speed. I mean, it's been amazing to watch. And they continue to do that. And you know, kind of jumping one little piece on there, you know, everybody knows that they moved the release date back 1 week. Now, that to me told me something, and I'm completely theorizing here, but what I saw there was, you know, they chose to just do 7 days. They could have chose to do 2 weeks. They could have chose to do 3 weeks. They chose one. To me, that sounds almost like they have an idea of what they think it is. To put yourself in that tight of a corner, but choose that specifically, it almost sounds to me like they've got a pretty good map of what they are going to try and how they're going to fix it. And they knew exactly how much time they thought they needed to get it to where they wanted it. Because anybody else would have said, you know, a month or something, you know, they chose to do just a week. So I think that they're working on their side. Now, that said, I'm gonna say something else, and this isn't meant to be offensive to anybody out there listening. If you do take it offensive, believe me, I'm not trying to sound offensive. There is a certain amount of responsibility on the player side. If you have a computer that is 5 years old and you are complaining about graphics and you're complaining about lag, you really have no business. and I say that nicely because I understand that the games like WoW and games like, you know, single player games like Fallout might run perfect. You know, I understand you can play Guild Wars without a hitch. That's great. They tailored their game to be like that. But we're in an era of online games where to assume that everybody should behave that way is kind of not okay. And I'm not saying everybody needs to be able to play Age of Conan in high, because none of us could, or Vanguard for that matter. But what I will say is, if your computer's so old that you are, I mean, you know, we have 8800s. I think I consider, we're by no means a high-end computer. You know, I have a 2.5 dual core, but 2.5 megahertz dual core. But the thing is, you know, I would consider myself still kind of on the low middle right now as far as where my speed is. And it does okay. But if you're running a computer that's 5 or 6 years old, you know, it's not okay to complain that you're getting lag, because your computer is 5 or 6 years old. And it's probably time to upgrade that. So, you know, this was kind of a tough one, because it's hard to say that without sounding like rude, like, you know what, you have no business doing that. But again, it comes back to the developers. There's a lot of tweaks and optimizations they can do. And some of them, you know, shoot, they got Fallout 3 to work perfectly on everybody's computer. So what, you know, what's going on there? So, you know, so there's a lot of work they have on their end. So there's, I'm gonna give it 3 duo cores, which makes it 6, because it's a duo core. You get it? See what I did there? I'm gonna give it 6 out of 10 with the potential of being 8. And now one thing I'm gonna say, and this is a big piece. I've been watching, especially with the patch notes and the developers, what they've been saying. If your computer is a single core, I'm understanding, if I understand correctly, the duo core people are going to have a lot better performance, because there is a lot of multi-threading going on that can be there in the background. If you can cheaply go from single to duo core, I think this is a good game to do that with, because I noticed that. I haven't had a lot of problems, but everybody who has single core seems to have some. Now, I'm assuming out there somebody's going to say, no, that's not true, because I saw this and blah, blah, blah. It just kind of seems to be the overall, but especially threading, dual core is always better. So
yeah,
there we go.
I would have to agree with all that as far as, you know, upgrading your machine and everything. I just think that the biggest complaint from a lot of people, and these are, you know, these are backseat developers, people who leave comments on forums and things like that, that, you know, they don't really know what's happening and what's truly going on. But I think the biggest complaint is people say, how can the graphics look like they do and the performance be so needy? You know, why does it require so much from my computer when the graphics aren't, you know, gorgeous? And those two don't really go as hand in hand as people might think. You know, it's not the quality of the art that has to do, or the quality of the animations that has to do with how much you know, how much juice it requires from your machine. It's a lot of things. It's a lot of different things. The quality of the art versus the polygon count, say, you know, the polygon count is a whole different thing. You look at some of the character, you know, the weapons and the armor and things like that. These things are pretty detailed, actually. So I think that's where a lot of it's coming from. Maybe they're going to go through before launch and they're going to kind of simplify a lot of that, which actually they've been doing. They've been simplifying, kind of reducing the, you know, the things that will take up so much of your power from your computer and from their computers, from the server, from the, you know, the distance between their servers and our computers. You know, the whole thing, the whole web of performance is being tweaked. So they understand that, they know how that works. I just honestly, I really hope that they get that straightened out by September 15th, because that's going to be a big one. It's going to be a big determiner.
You're absolutely right. And that's the thing, I think, overall, that I really want to portray to everybody, just overall. You know, remember, at this point in the game, but I'm on a roll tonight with this. at this point in the game, we are still in beta. And inevitably, what these guys did was they made the core game. They made it work. Now what they're doing is we're in open beta. There are more people on than ever before, and they are looking for bottlenecks. And the reason that I bring that up is because, you know, it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about most games choose to ignore everybody at this point and focus on marketing. You look at a lot of games that get down to the last 11th hour, and it seems like the patches stop. You know, money changes hands. You know, people get moved. I don't know. In this case, these guys know they are at the 11th hour. They are moving. They know that everything is based on this launch. They are moving fast to make sure this game, you know, that they put all these years of work in is going to work. And so, you know, let's be mindful of that, you know, to everybody out there. You know, I understand lag problems, whatever. You know, give them time. They probably know better than we do exactly why it's probably happening, and they're just narrowing the bottlenecks down once they see them. But also remember, we have an obligation to make sure we're telling them. You know, if you're getting lag, don't just tell it on the forums. File a bug report. If you're crashing in certain places, file a bug report. And, you know, I think we all have done that. In places we did that. Now, if you're somebody who hasn't, you know, just remember, it's kind of tough to complain in a beta when you're not actually telling them you had that problem, because maybe they know, maybe they don't. And the more info they get, the quicker they can fix it, and they'll be the first to tell you that. So, we'll know real quick.
Cool. Yeah, that's actually the last category I had. So basically, you know, I guess as an overall, tallying up everything. Now, we kind of ended on kind of a negative note here, because we started out with the good stuff, you know, besides the graphics thing. We started out with a lot of the good stuff, like the music and the crafting and the skill system, our very favorite things. So once we got towards the end, we kind of went over the bad stuff. So tallying that all up and not, you know, making a scientific calculation or anything, I would say for an overall score for the game, the way it is right now, again, let me reiterate that, the way the game is right now before launch, I would give it an 8.5. And that's even despite the fact that I've given a few fours, or at least one four and a few fives here and there. But I also gave two tens. I gave a 9. I gave an 8. You know, there are a lot of things in this game that get me excited. I've said this before on Massively, that despite these other games that are coming out that are gorgeous, you know, both Ion and Champions Online, which are just both gorgeous games, I am going to play Fallen Earth. And I'm not just saying that on a post-apocalyptic podcast because it's what people want to hear. It's the truth, you know. Now, the fact that I like the genre probably plays a lot into that. And the fact that I like scavenging and I like a lot of what this game stands for, that's it. That's it for me. This is a game that I'm going to buy, that I'm going to subscribe to for at least a few months. And just, you know, that's not even something I like to do, is get games right at launch, you know, because there's always bugs to be worked out, especially when they open those floodgates. That actually reminds me that there's a very interesting little part here. Fallen Earth is in the pre-order stage at Direct to Drive is the second highest selling for Direct to Drive. That's only second to Champions Online, and third is Ion. And Ion is NCSoft. You know, that's a huge company. It's got this huge advertising budget, and they are third, right after Fallen Earth, who is an independent company. You know, they haven't really done much advertising at all, or any kind of marketing budget, and that's pretty good. So the floodgates are going to be open. A lot of people are going to be playing this game on launch, and I can't wait to see how that develops. I can't wait to see how the Fallen Earth team runs with that, you know, because now they're going to have this nice pool of money from the pre-orders and everything, where they're going to be able to spend a little bit more on maybe, you know, server upgrades or whatever they need to do to tweak it and get the game going better. So I really look forward to that. So yeah, like I said, 8.5 out of 10. Let's say 8.5 Rad Scorpions out of 10.
You know, I'm with you on this. I absolutely am. The score I'm going to give it to, this is overall, this is not averaging out my previous. This is going to be a lot based on what I've seen, a lot based on what I've heard, and a lot based on potential overall. Because, you know, any other genre, and it would be probably a lot trickier to rate this, but with it being a post-apocalyptic game. Now, let me put this disclaimer out at the beginning. There are people out there that are going to go, yeah, but you're biased. You've been for this game the whole time. You're the, you know, post-apocalyptic guy. You want to go out there and just hug them. And you know what? Yeah, there's truth to that. But that also makes me harder to appease, because I know what I'm looking for. Well, all of our listeners are in this category. I think it's all of us. You know, we're all very picky. We know what we're looking for in a game, and we're harder to appease because of that. We know what we're looking for. But now, everything all around, the brilliance of having everything be crafted, the whole skill-based system, you know, the fact that the world's explorable. And, you know, we kind of went back to that, you know, there's a lot of openness in the world. Yeah, but you get vehicles, you can drive around, you know, it's, who does that? I mean, name another online game where you can do that. It took, you know, World of Warcraft forever to finally figure out that, yeah, I guess we should let them fly everywhere, shouldn't we? So overall, you know, with just the potential of what we have here and the trust that they're working on this and they see this. And this brings up one quick point here. This is something I've been meaning to do from the beginning. I've been watching very close. Anybody in my work will tell you that at the very end of the day, the first thing I do is check the patch notes. The patch notes with these guys have been almost daily. And you probably heard me joke about this quite a bit in the intro. But the fact is that for being a smaller independent group, I have never in my whole years of seeing online games since the beginning have seen a group so absolutely determined that they are going to polish this game and make it as good as they can with what they have. Because it was, you know, daily patches, and the patches aren't just minimal. They're huge, just pages and pages. And they're big, and they're listening, and they're not just your typical, we added 1,000 more stupid things. You know, they're mentioning, you know, whenever you see the patch notes, the first response after it is always, oh great, you got that one. You know, they know what they're needing to fix, and they're doing it. And for that reason alone, I wanted to have us give them the Best Developer Patchers Award for the year 2009. So we'd like to give them a big hand. Thank you. Yay. Yeah, seriously. You guys are honestly, you know, and I'm not trying to sound like a fanboy here, but the Fallen Earth team, they are developer gods. Because what they've done here is break the normal code of MMOs. We've all been around for these. We see what happens. The game goes gold and the developing seems to stop. Everybody seems to go quiet and patches are remedied about 4 months down the line. These guys know they're at the 11th hour. They're fixing the game. You're going to see probably bigger and bigger patches hitting the servers. I mean, it's almost to the point where you get to the server and it's almost a different game every time you look at a patch. Yeah. And that is really, really amazing. And so my hat is off to those guys. So overall, especially with potential involved, I'm going to give them, let's say, I'm going to give them 9 blown up megatons out of 10, because wow, I have a lot of hope for this. And I love blowing up megatons, so that says a lot. Half of our listener base just turned this show off. But it really means a lot to me. I mean, I foresee the most wonderful post-apocalyptic sandbox. You know, I know we joke that, you know, don't say it's not like Fallout 3. It seems to me like the perfect companion to Fallout 3 being the single player. And for that alone, I will be playing this. I will be pre-ordering. And for God's sakes, if we're going to group up, let's do it for the simple reason that we're all on the same team together. Yeah! And I'll leave it up to them to figure out which team that was.
Actually, you know, you just reminded me, we got an email. Actually, I think we got a couple emails where people are saying, hey, you know, we know that you've been talking about Fallen Earth, and we know you probably love it. And this was before, of course, we could talk about the fact that we were in the beta. And people are like, hey, are you going to form a clan, a through the Aftermath clan, once the game launches? Personally, I mean, Jonathan, I don't know if you plan on doing that, but I'm not going to really do anything like that right away. I want to see kind of how everything, you know, unfolds and things like that, and how much I like the game in a couple months, and see if I still love it as much as I do now. But I don't know. I mean, I think that's one of those things that really takes a dedicated, you know, clan leader and all that stuff. So if someone wants to make one, that would be pretty amazing. I myself, I'm probably not going to make one though. But Jonathan, do you think you'll make one?
You know what? I think so. Now that really? Said, here, let me set a disclaimer in front. I am the way things are, and this is something that me and Sean have dealt with in it, you know, previously. You know, we're not hardcore gamers to the extreme. I think, you know, both of the, you know, a lot of us and you listeners out there are all probably exactly the same. You know, we all have our normal lives. We have like a lot of priorities. And just giving a quick example, you know, I had a tragedy in my little family that kind of changed a lot of my, I don't want to say changed my priorities, but it did kind of change a lot of my time handling, because of, you know, needing to be with family right now. But what I would want to do is this. I would say I would love to be in a clan as a group. Now, that said, the disclaimer is this. I probably won't be on it all the time. You know, I think it'll be pretty casual, but I would love to be in the clan just for the simple fact of if I am online, it would be awesome to be in the group with the people who are our listener base.
Exactly.
Because we have some amazing communities out there, and it stands to reason that, you know, we have enough people that are natural leaders in our listener base, especially like on the forums, that if they wanted to be the clan leader and we were sort of kind of in from the sideline and joined in when we had the moment, and we could go right in and do it. And as soon as we were online, hey, let's go, you know, with the knowledge that there would be times we'd probably log in and be like, well, you know, tonight might not work, but had the opportunity to really touch base with the listener base just from that, having the clan option, I would be all for it. So anybody out there who does, you know, have a lot of time, does want to really, you know, set that clan up and let us be part of it, I would love to do that.
Yeah, me too. I would love to, you know, if there's anyone I want to play with in the game, it's people who listen to our show. That's a given. So,
absolutely.
But I am not, you know, a clan leader.
Exactly.
Yeah, I would love to play with everybody. If somebody wants to set it up and be the clan leader, go for it, and I will join. I think we agree on that. So yeah. That would be, and of course, you know, that's something we can talk about more down the line and everything, and get that going. I think that'd be kind of cool. So yeah, I guess that's this is probably our longest show yet, but we had a lot to say about this game. We've been, you know, it's been building up for a long time, and actually, you know, a lot of this is just our opinion. We didn't really go into a lot of the details of the game itself. I mean, we touched on it, but there's so much more to talk about. So I'm sure down the line we'll be talking about the game here and there, especially when, you know, there's big changes to the game or whatever. We'll definitely talk about it a lot more. And, you know, launch is coming up in a couple weeks, so we'll talk about that. So yeah, this is just basically our first impression opinion of the game, and I hope you guys like the show. But if you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at show@throughtheaftermath.com. You can also check us out at virginworlds.com. And we have a Twitter page and our Facebook page. And next week, well, not this weekend. This is probably going to release on a weekend. But the following week, September 4th, that week, I will be at Dragon Con. So if anybody out there is going to Dragon Con and you want to say hi, I will actually be... Well, I'll probably be wearing a Massively T-shirt because I'm getting some made up and to hand out to people. But it'll be kind of for Massively. That's why I'll be there. So I will be speaking at a few panels. There will be a Lord of the Rings Online panel I'll be speaking at. I will be hanging out. There's actually a post-apocalyptic track of Dragon Con. I will be hanging out as much as I can with it. I tried to get in there. I tried to see if I could speak at one of those panels. I'm like, please, I run this little podcast. But it's apparently that's not enough for them. So I'll be hanging out at a lot of those panels. So hopefully I'll see someone there. And you know, if you see me, if you know what I look like, which I don't know why you would, but if you know what I look like, or you know, you see a guy, a bald guy with a big beard who's walking around with a Massively shirt on, come and say hi to me and let me know if you listen to the show, because I know a lot of you out there are going to Dragon Con, so I'm pretty excited about that. So I guess that's it. Was there anything else you wanted to say, Jonathan?
No, we'll just we look forward to now at the end of this open beta, you know, hopefully seeing you guys in game and talking about it quick.
Yeah, definitely. So until next time, this is Sean
and Jonathan saying stay alive out there. Oh, see, I need to find that speaking skill book. We should just leave that because it was all about the average.